This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
Very aggressive 3 days this week. We begin the show with music meant to send you into the weekend, hips thrusting, chest thumping. Stugatz got my Friday morning rolling by saying to no one in particular, I just bet Liberty.
Yeah!
Look out, 10 a.m. Friday. Put it on the poll, Guillermo, at Le Batard Show. Does your friend have a gambling problem when he tells you at 10 a.m. on a Friday, I just bet Liberty?
They're 5-0.
Yeah, good team this year.
Do you know anything about Liberty? I'm not talking about just the school. I'm talking about the concept as a principal. I'm also talking about Liberty University, their politics. Do you know anything about Liberty? Anything?
I think Hugh Freeze coached for them or against them from a hospital bed once.
Yes, got shut out last year. So the thing that you know is the thing that's most recent. You pulled one out of your betting today, Liberty. Do they play today?
They play tomorrow. It's a big, big game. I'm not certain who they're playing. They're 5-0.
You were talking. Why were you talking about the 10:30 games a second ago? Were you talking? Well, like, what was the matter with you? You're happy that the late game chasers are back?
I mean, we got Big Ten football back, and that is great, with the exception of Wisconsin. We got all kinds of different games here, but what we've lacked with college football is the chaser, the late night chase, where you're trying to make up for all the Liberty bets you made earlier in the day. Okay, you don't have the Hawaii game yet, but you do have a couple of 10:30 kickoffs like BYU. I'll be all over that one.
Okay, he is very
BYU is very good too. I mean, they are in the Final Four mix. They really are.
You're basing that on what? Like you
they're
just,
undefeated.
You just flashed your sausage fingers at me. Again, you are making picks all across this network, not knowing anything about the teams you're talking about. Like, what you know is that BYU won earlier this season by blowout. The return of college football amid the pandemic. Was it over Navy? Is that what they did? Their first game out of the box against Navy? That's what you remember.
Yep, they took care of Navy, and they're undefeated. And listen, when you have Liberty taking on Southern Miss, Dan, anything can happen. But Southern Miss down year 1-3, Liberty 5-0, quarterback very good, solid defense, and minus 11. I mean, lock that price in now.
I want to ask the audience something here, because Randy Scott, the SportsCenter anchor, was on Twitter, and there's a photo of Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving sitting next to each other. And the question being posed is, who's stopping them? And Randy Scott's response is, dude on the right, probably pointing out Kyrie Irving. And what I wanted to ask you, because I was having this conversation with Bomani about Dwight Howard and Bob Ryan coming on earlier this week and saying that Dwight Howard was a clown and doesn't belong in the Hall of Fame, when it's pretty indisputable, but by the standards of that sport, Dwight Howard is a Hall of Famer, whether you regard him as one or not, statistically, empirically, mathematically.
The problem is the standards. It seems like everyone gets into that Basketball Hall of Fame.
It's not just that, though. Also, his career over a good period of time before the game evolved, he was a dominant player at the top of the sport. Regardless, that wasn't the conversational point that was interesting to me. What was interesting to me is how much we end up taking from a dude's excellence when we simply don't like him. Kyrie Irving is, a lot of people would answer what Randy Scott did there. When Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving are together and you ask who's stopping them, and Randy Scott is saying Kyrie Irving is probably stopping them, there are very few players ever like Dwight Howard and Kyrie Irving, where you diminish them because you dislike them.
Right.
You diminish them.
Kevin Durant gets some of that as well, by the way.
Well, but I don't think anyone disputes Kevin Durant's excellence except for you. Like, I don't think.
Oh, I don't even dispute his excellence. His competitiveness is what I dispute.
Okay, but you think there are a lot of people out there saying Kevin Durant's not one of the best basketball players ever?
I think people, Kevin Durant is unlike just about any talent we've ever seen in the NBA, and I don't think he gets enough credit because he's a bit quirky, he's a bit sensitive, and a lot of people agree with me that he took an easy path to get
title. I think Kevin Durant is plenty disliked. I don't think that many people discredit him or his excellence because of how he is disliked, where no one's going to keep Kevin Durant out of the Hall of Fame because they don't like him. Terrell Owens was kept out of the Hall of Fame because the writers didn't like him. Like that's a thing that happened. But I don't think that those people were actually disputing his excellence. They were just arguing on behalf of something else.
Right.
They were arguing on behalf of sportsmanship and guys shouldn't be wrecking teams. They weren't arguing about whether or not his excellence deserved to be in the Hall of Fame.
Do you think that will potentially happen to Kyrie Irving once he gets to that stage of his...
Well, I think it's happening right now. Is what the conversation I'm trying to have with you guys is, why do you do that? Like, what are you doing there? Whatever Dwight Howard's crimes are, they're probably pretty benign. Like, they're not even... So, Terrell Owens, you did it with a pen in the sock because he was urinating on the idea of sportsmanship, because he wasn't really a team player. He was obviously a narcissist and a diva. And so his crimes were crimes against sportsmanship. His crimes were crimes against, decorum.
Right. I mean, with Kyrie, I don't diminish. He's a talented player. He's never been the best player on a team and taken that team to the playoffs or the championship round.
Stugatz, he won a championship. I know. And in that hold on, just absorb this because you always do this to him.
Okay.
He won a championship, and in that championship, he hit the biggest or the second biggest shot in the history of the sport. You can't take those things from him.
I am not diminishing his greatness. He's a great basketball player. I said that on the front end, but there is some quirky qualities to him where he thinks he's smarter than you or better than you or knows more than you.
Well, that's not Dwight Howard's. Those are not Dwight Howard's crimes.
No, they're not. But Kyrie just rubs people the wrong way. I don't think it will prevent him from getting into the Hall of Fame. I think people realize he's a great player when you see him on the floor. How could you not? I mean,
I think that Mike Ryan doesn't like Kyrie Irving. Mike Ryan is done with Kyrie Irving.
I'm not a fan of Kyrie Irving. I think if he buys into a system, and I'm not even sure he fully bought into what happened in Cleveland, but while yes, he was really good that NBA Finals, remember there were games that he and LeBron both scored 40 plus, you can't forget what happened in Boston either. They made runs with him out injured. It was a very ugly end. They seem better for getting away from him.
They were better. They were better before him and better after him. Like, they were better in the last 8 years of Celtics basketball. The worst stretch of it has been Kyrie Irving.
So when you ask Randy Scott, why do you do that? That's why. I mean, went to the Celtics and they were better without him. They made a deeper run without Kyrie Irving. They did. And then he left and it seemed like all those guys were free and happy.
But what I would say to you, though, is one of those things, when I put them next to each other in terms of how we remember you, you're holding up the Celtics. I'm holding up a championship and the biggest shot in that championship. If I make it someone other than Kyrie Irving, you're not holding Boston against him like that. If I make it someone that you don't dislike, someone that you like, because it's indisputable what you're saying. They were not as good with Kyrie Irving, and it was mysterious. And before that, before LeBron got to Cleveland, they were a loser with Kyrie Irving as their best player. But I'm more interested in why it is you guys dislike people and where it is and how it is you discount them in a way that makes you say Dwight Howard's not a Hall of Famer, not because of the numbers. I don't like him, and therefore I'm going to distort what the numbers look like to me because I simply don't like him.
For me, they're very different players, and I dislike them for very different reasons. I just think Dwight Howard is corny. I don't dislike him the way that with Kyrie Irving, it's like you forced a trade from a team that won a championship when you're going to be favored in the East. I don't get this. To go do your own thing, and then it blows up in your face spectacularly. I don't know how much better he makes teams if he's the main guy.
Dan Le Batard.
Oh, Shlomo.
Stugatz.
Come on, Shlomo.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz on ESPN Radio.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Drivers who save with Progressive save over $750 on average. Guest on the Dan Le Batard Show appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line today on ESPN Daily. This Sunday's Bucks-Raiders game will be a study in the history of Raiders head coach John Gruden. Get to the backstory of the matchup and how the Raiders are adapting to their new home in Las Vegas. I'm interested in that. That's on ESPN Daily. Subscribe wherever you get your podcast.
John Smoltz going to join us in 15 minutes. He's calling the World Series. We always like talking to him because he represents a time when we loved baseball as a show, as a country, across generations. John Smoltz, a name from the 90s, will join us in 15 minutes. He's got to be weirded out that everyone who comes out of a bullpen throws harder than he does. It's just got to be weird to him. It really does. It's just sort of insane.
And he threw very hard, by the way. Yes.
If you're wondering where Billy is and why you haven't heard from him, he has not said a word since going on a yammering diatribe about monster trucks and roller derby. You can catch all of that in the Big Suey Hour.
We were just marveling during the break that Billy spoke for, I think, 10 minutes consecutively about both of those topics. And then we had Smoltz on. We haven't heard from Billy since.
I know. Billy, if you want maximum Billy, check it out. The Big Suey. He gets very fired up about rollerblading and monster trucks. I want to talk about, Stugatz, just to make fun, I want to talk about New York football.
Okay.
But before I do that, I have to point out that Stugatz, during the last break, with no irony, also got done saying, I just took Troy.
Oh, yeah.
I just took Troy.
I don't know anything about him, but the team they're playing is bad.
You might as well just go on Facebook and flip a coin with some guy named Troy for $50.
I mean, they're playing Georgia State, Dan. Have you seen how bad Georgia State is this year?
I have not.
I haven't, but I've heard.
Right,
I
you've mean, heard. You've yes. seen their record. Yes. We're going to put Christine Lisi here with an "and finally," even though this isn't "and finally," it's "and firstly." But she'll be back in a second. We need to make room for John Smoltz. So here's Christine Lisi.
And finally, Spam is short for spiced ham. Now back to two guys who already knew that.
Did not know that. I was not aware of that. Did you know that? Put it on the poll, Guillermo, at Lebatard Show. Did you know that Spam was short for spiced ham? That is not something. Have you had Spam, Stugatz? I've never had.
I have not, but if it was called spiced ham, perhaps I would try it.
You know what? Put that on the poll as well, Guillermo. Would you be more likely to eat something named spiced ham than Spam?
You trying to convince everybody you don't eat Spam.
So this is from Football Perspective, Stugatz. The Giants really benefit from sharing the headlines with the Jets. Because since 2017, the Giants are 5-16 in the NFC East, and they have a league worst 8-26 record in non-division games. 8-26.
Mm-hmm.
Gettleman! Gettleman!
Still in the mix, though, in that division.
Our beloved Gettleman. That had to be the most Gettleman Daniel Jones play. I'm asking you right now in fiction to come up with a better Gettleman Daniel Jones play than the longest run by a quarterback ever that wasn't a scoring run. Usually when a quarterback runs for 80 yards, there are not a lot of circumstances where that doesn't end up in a touchdown. There are certainly not a lot of circumstances where he runs for 80 yards and no tackler is near him and he is faster than everybody and at one point is going 21 miles per hour now that we keep stats on that stuff.
He's really fast. He started stumbling around the 25. He collapsed at the 10. He rolled to the 6-yard line. I love that both sidelines were laughing, including his own. And the Giants, it was strange to see them laughing so hard. There was a chance, because that was a gimme touchdown, and there's a chance they don't score there, yet that did not prevent the Giant players from laughing at their quarterback.
If I had said to you, or the country, or the nation, if I had said to you, and you had not seen it, Daniel Jones had an 80-yard run last night. It was not a touchdown run. Do you imagine it would have looked like it should have had clown car music, the Benny Hill music? More than that, your quarterback is running free toward a touchdown. He is moving fast. He is looking athletic. The problem with Daniel Jones, Stugatz, along with his turnovers, is that Daniel Jones will go down the field and he'll convert 6 3rd and 9s, and you'll be like, way to go, Daniel Jones. And then he throws an interception at the goal line.
Yeah, bad ones.
Because he has got some numbers, Stugatz, that we have not seen in a while when it comes to turnovers. This is from Hembo.
Okay.
Daniel Jones has 34 career turnovers, most for an active quarterback in the first 20 games. That record was previously held by Geno Smith.
Oof.
New York football, again and again. New York football. That name, Geno Smith, 32 turnovers. Daniel Jones has 34, as quarterbacks are getting better at protecting the ball than they've ever been. He's out here he's a vending machine. Footballs keep popping out, or he's running for an 80-yard touchdown, and he just trips on the 25-yard line.
He has moments, though, as you pointed out, where he looks like a really good NFL quarterback or someone who could be a really good NFL quarterback, and that team has been in just about every game they played this year. They haven't won any of them, but they've been in just about every game.
They beat the Washington football team because of Riverboat Ron. John Smoltz joins us next.
Don Lebatard.
How often do men communicate about their emotions?
Stugatz.
Never.
This is the Don Lebatard Show on ESPN Radio.
John Smoltz going to join us in just a second here on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Pennzoil synthetic motor oils are made from natural gas. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W-30. ESPN Investigate Season 2, The Running Man Podcast, is now available. Subscribe and listen wherever you get your podcast.
World Series Game 3, 4, and 5, the next three nights, 8 p.m. Eastern on Fox. If necessary, Game 6 and 7 will be Tuesday, Wednesday, 8 p.m. on Fox. Joined now by John Smoltz, who's sitting next to our boy John Buck. John Buck, I just made him the Toronto Blue Jays catcher, Joe Buck. How tired is he, John? Joe Buck is doing 7 games in 7 days.
Tired are you?
Tired is John Buck?
It's amazing. I've watched this over the last couple of years to see anybody do something like this. I'm amazed. Look, he makes it seem easy. I try to think about what my role would be if I had to go. And, you know, I know a lot about basketball, but let's get, this different, doing a different sport. If you had to cross over and do a baseball game, the next day do a basketball game, it's pretty amazing to watch him do football and baseball. So, no signs at all.
What are the weirdest things about calling these games during a pandemic?
The biggest thing is, of course, can't get around the players and the managers to talk to them. You miss that. The information that you get, now we're doing conference calls and all that. So you've gotten used to the environment, but I don't think as a broadcaster and or a player we'd ever get used to not having fans be a big part of that.
How old do you feel when you watch the Blue Jays?
I feel when I watch the Blue Jays?
Just their whole infield is guys you played against sons. Like, you played against these guys. There's so many guys in the big leagues right now, John, that you played against their fathers.
Just in general, like Dante Bichette's kid being in the big leagues now.
It blows me away. When it first hit, it was when I got to spring training and I was visiting the San Diego Padres and I saw the name Quantrill. I pitched against his dad in high school. And we were the seniors in high school, and I went, this is blowing me away. So I definitely feel old, and I definitely feel like the generation that I played is now starting to catch up to me. Even doing a game with Charlie Morton that we'll be able to do tonight is that he was a teammate of mine when he was a baby, and he's lasted long enough to be able to play in the World Series and pitch these incredible games. So, yeah, I'm at that point. I don't know where the next point it goes. I want to be like Jim Cott. I want to be able to be in this game forever and play golf both right-handed and left-handed and look like him at his age. So maybe that's my next goal.
You do. You know how much baseball has changed since you were playing it. What do you like and what don't you like about, shifts, all home runs and strikeouts, not a lot of contact? Like, what are the things that you like about the evolution of the game and don't?
Well, I would have liked to know everything about, like, let's say I was facing you. I would know everything there is to know about your tendencies, what you do, what you like, what you don't like. And so that information would be helpful. But the one thing I probably would love to see go away, and I just because the athleticism of our players are so great, I'll say it like this. We get to see Mookie Betts in the outfield. You know why? Because he doesn't have three other guys around him, like closely in a shift. We get to see his athleticism robbing a home run and the five-tool player. I would love to see the shift go away so we can see the athleticism again of a second baseman, the shortstop, cover more territory, the arm be showed off. And then, honestly, because the shift would go away, we'd see more action and hits that guys just, when they hit it on the ground, aren't going to have. And that would be the only thing that I would like to see, the athleticism come back. You know, imagine Ozzie Smith, and you got Ozzie Smith as a shortstop, so now you have a decided advantage over the next team. Well, because the game is smarter and there's more information, they realize, well, I don't have Ozzie Smith, so the next best thing is I'll put a couple guys over there that could take the territory that Ozzie Smith does, and collectively we'll be okay. So from that standpoint, the athleticism of the game's never been greater, but I'd like to see more of the individual athleticism in play.
John, of all the rule changes that they've implemented in this odd season, are any of them, do you think that they can use moving forward?
Oh, yeah. I think you're going to see a couple of them stay for sure. I like and I always have thought outside the box with the extra inning rules. I know people right away kind of just got crazy with that, thinking it was stupid. It's saving a lot of arms, it's saving a lot of time, and it's actually creating more action. I don't care what the percentage says, that percentage of games that go 17 innings or XYZ. As a former player, this is what I know the indirect consequences happen that no one really pays attention to. Game goes 17 innings, some young kid pitches his butt off for 4.5 innings, and then what happens the next day? He gets sent down. So I think the extra innings rule is going to stay. I think some form of the three batter might, there's the starting process to see how can prevent, 100 pitching changes just because. And I think you're in a way that maybe down the road you can institute planned doubleheaders for next year, once a month, once a week, whatever, at 7 innings. That people thought that was the dumbest thing in the world, and then they all of a sudden said, well, you know what, that's not so bad. A 7-inning doubleheader every once in a while creates some different excitement and gets the job done because of the pandemic. I know why we had to do that. So those two might have, you might have some intertwining of some of these rules where you go, I can see it now. And it happens in every sport, by the way. All these things that we complain about in the beginning, at the end, play at the plate, the play at second base, the quarterback can't get touched, all those things were done for a reason. And I think baseball was probably the one that gets yelled at the most when they make moves.
Yes or no, baseball to you is more boring today than it was when you played?
I'm going to say it's different.
So yes.
Different.
Okay, you're saying it's different, though, different. Because you're calling the games, games 3, 4, and 5, the next three nights, 8 p.m. on Fox. I can't imagine that you enjoy as much the absence of contact. The other yes or no question I was going to ask you, John, is could Ozzie Smith even play today? Defensively, obviously.
Liability, offensively.
But no, all the shortstops and second basemen can hit opposite field home runs 400 feet.
That's a fair point. I think there are a lot of interesting questions. I'll just take it a step further. Would the 1980s Cardinals be any good in this decade? I think anytime you try to bring people into different generations, look, the game was totally different. We as players had to perform in the reward system that was then. And to try to cross it over and to think that style would or would not be successful now is kind of a moot point because the reward system's different. If you told Tony Gwynn that they didn't care how many times he struck out, but they needed him to hit more power, more homers, he would have hit more homers. He would have, instead of hitting 365, he'd have hit 310, and he would have struck out a few more times to sacrifice. And so that style is difficult to say, well, this is what Tony Gwynn would have done. I'll say this. The Cardinal team would be a nightmare for people to play today because they would put the ball in play, they would not hit home runs, and they would be able to create havoc with their feet. So, listen, baseball stars, Nintendo, That's how I won every game. That's why I was the king when I was a kid. I built it around the St. Louis Cardinals model. No one could stop me. I'd slap it over there. I'd steal, and it's one of the greatest games.
Tommy Herr was a monster in that
Jack
game.
Clark would come up and hit a three-run
Jack
homer.
Clark would. Jack Clark would hit the ball 500 feet, but he was the only guy who could do it. John, you are stunned that every guy who comes into a game out of a bullpen throws harder than you.
Oh, yeah. No doubt. No doubt. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, the arms are ridiculous. And you sit there and you know, I got drool coming out of one side of my mouth. And then I sit there and go, well, I only hope, and I do this, and I hope that they have as long a career as they want or can be. And, you know, we talk about the arms and we talk about the velocity, and it is supernatural. Like, never before have we seen the kind of easy gas and velocity, and unfortunately what comes with that is a lot of injuries, and that's my only selfish desire for these guys, is that they get a chance to do what I did, and that's put on a uniform until someone rips it off and you can't physically do it anymore.
John Smoltz with us on ESPN Radio. Get you out of here in a second. World Series Game 3, 4, and 5, the next three nights, 8 p.m. Eastern on Fox. Is the criticism of – you were known as a big-game pitcher, John. Is the criticism of Clayton Kershaw fair?
Not really, because of the way that – it's like two lives he's had. You know, the first half where he was young and dominating baseball at a 1.9, 2.1 ERA, he was trying to carry the franchise – with all the innings and all the support that he didn't have early. Now he's got better support, and I think you actually will see a guy not carry that burden. I've always said there are elite superstar first ballot Hall of Famers like him that try to go to the next level of Hall of Fame when they go to pitch in the postseason. It's impossible. You can't do that. And I think a tendency is for Clayton to carry all of that regular season dominance and say, I got to do it here. And he really doesn't. And it's been some quirky, weird. You got to go back and look at some of those individual games and you just shake your head going, that can't happen again. Seven runs with two outs. It happened to the Cardinals. And so that narrative keeps coming. And every time he pitches, remember, he struck out 13 against the Milwaukee Brewers, pitched really well. He actually pitched really well against the Padres. No matter how many, if he wins three in a row, all he needs is one that doesn't go right. What happens? The narrative goes back to the overall work of the postseason. I don't buy it. If I was a manager, I'd give him the ball in a game that I know he can help us win. And I think you're seeing a more relaxed version of Clayton Kershaw. And that's why I think if he keeps continuing to pitch, he's going to have a lot more wins than losses in the postseason.
John, good talking to you. Thank you for making the time during a busy time, sir.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, guys.
Don Lebatard.
Yo, chicken time.
Stugats.
Smarter guy.
This is the Don Lebatard Show with the Stugats on ESPN Radio.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Listen to every single pitch of the 2020 World Series on ESPN Radio. Coverage of Game 3 between the Dodgers and Rays begins at 7:30 Eastern. News from the Dan Lebatard Show Nation. Someone has just hit us up on the Dr. Pepper Twitter feed. David Christopher Ramirez at Catholic22Card says, correct me if I'm wrong, the English during World War II named it special processed American meat. I love it fried with mustard on white bread. Devil's ham is another great on white bread. Breakfast of champions.
All right. Some a real spam zealot then is what we've got via tweet. I've got another tweet here because we were talking about the Borat sequel that is now at a time that is content starved. Not a whole lot of people can make very much new stuff during a pandemic. You have a couple of weeks before the election in an extraordinary publicity stroke. You have Sacha Baron Cohen as Borat on Amazon Prime ensnaring Rudy Giuliani, the president of the United States attorney, again, a couple of weeks before the election. Ensnaring him in something that looks suspicious, but is all under performance art. He's not doing journalism here, although he is, but he's not. And Andy Kaufman doesn't get to be remembered as one of the great comics ever. He was too weird, too awkward. It was right. Too quirky. Some of it was too him. And Sacha Baron Cohen will not be known as the great comic of this generation. But what he just did before an election to me. The seismic resonance of it in terms of both newsworthiness and just the creation of performance art. Like what you just saw happen to publicize a movie, something that feels like journalism but isn't, and it might have an actual journalistic impact at a time that we have dented journalism's credibility. You're always going to get this guy who tweets just imagining all the editing they did and could still only make it look that bad. That was a contrived nothing burger that makes Trump look good and right about the media. The fact that he's making Borat media, first of all, is wonderful. The fact that Giuliani is making Borat media and calling him Borat as if he doesn't know he's a fictional character while saying, I called the police on Borat. That's performance art at the highest level of our country. Like, it's never been done like that. That's better than anything Andy Kaufman ever did, wrestling with Jerry Lawler and going and doing an interview on Letterman, although that's a close second.
I mean, it's 2020. It's such a strange time. Is it possible Giuliani's just old?
Yes, but also one of the things that makes it funny, and keep in mind, we're coming off of Giuliani being on television making accusations, like the timeliness of that, making accusations against Biden's son that put him in a position, that Borat just put him in a position, and then, lest you think it's Chris Hansen journalism, lest you think it's To Catch a Predator, the thing doesn't go as far as it needs to totally creep you out, because Sacha Baron Cohen runs into the room wearing something that looks like physical comedy, bikini, whatever it is that he wears, hairy and disgusting. And he bursts into the room and says, no, take me instead of my daughter. To which Giuliani scampers out of the room. Now, is this going to help Amazon Prime, Mike? Like, how much is this going to help?
I don't think Bezos needs the help, but it might.
But Amazon Prime doesn't have, like, it hasn't become Netflix. He's been pouring all this money into Amazon Prime, and they have, like, extraordinary resources, obviously.
They have great programming there. They do. There's great content.
Yeah, but
there.
None of it has really caught, though. None of it has gone over.
The Boys seems to be making inroads in that in terms of the original content game. They've had some movie exclusives. But, yeah, this is a cultural event. For the first time, people are flocking to Amazon Prime to watch something the day it gets released. This isn't one of those word-of-mouth things. Like Dirtbag was a word-of-mouth thing that showed up on Amazon Prime. This is a seminal cultural event in 2020 that people are going
to
see.
I want you guys to appreciate in real time, like, the height of comedy that this is. All the free advertising he got at this story coming out, and the movie coming out right around this last debate as we head toward, you know, the most contentious election of our lifetime. And this guy is putting out a work of art on the front end that is legitimately newsworthy, feels on the cusp of news, but can't be because, look, he's running in at the end in a bikini. Like, it's not journalism, but it is. It's art. It's performance art. It's the best that this stuff can be done.
Meant to say Fleabag. I'm sorry. I actually really like that show. I'm not sure why I called it Dirtbag.
Fleabag is great. Fleabag is groundbreaking television, won a whole bunch of awards, but still will not do for Amazon Prime what this is going to do.
Probably because you were looking at me when you said it, Mike.
Tim Kirkshin joins us next.